This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. I'm 36. I live with my husband, two daughters, and our dog. For many, many years, I got into a habit of drinking 2 to 3, but usually 3, large glasses of wine every night once my kids were in bed. Everyone I fessed up to said it was fine, but a niggly feeling in me just knew it wasn't. One day I impulsively said, right, that's it, no more. And I went on a search for different resources to help me. I came across ATI and I immediately loved it because suddenly this dramatic lifestyle change that I had embarked on wasn't about boring restriction. It was about enjoying life and discovering loads of really cool things. I signed up to become an ATI member, and that is great because you have access to a whole load of supportive people on the forum. You can log on to Zoom meetups, which happen daily, so you never feel alone. And we get to listen to a whole other episode every week, which is the premium pod. So a huge thank you to the ATI team for everything. The last 6 months have been awesome.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's fabulous to have you listening. You may be alcohol free. You might be sober curious. You might actually still be drinking, because I know a lot of people discover this podcast when they're just starting to have a think about their relationship with alcohol. We're not bothered. Wherever you are on this, I'm going to say it, I'm going to use the J word really early on this journey. It's really lovely to have you listening, so thank you very, very much. Ben, I'm giddy because of the guest today. I'm quite excited.
Do you want me to jump in here?
Jump in, and then come back to me for the intro.
My name is Ben. I am 34 years old. I live in Liverpool. I'm over 1,000 days alcohol-free. And for me, I was a binge drinker. It just affected my life in so many ways. Removing alcohol completely has allowed me to do the things that I actually genuinely really, really, really want to do with my life. And I've got a son, I've got a fiance, and of course I love doing this podcast with you every week, Sharon, because the consistency levels are off the charts. We do this every single week without fail.
Until the end of actual time itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, back to your intro then.
Right.
Where were
now
we?
Now I've composed myself. I think I told you my name, Sharon Hartley. Call me Shaz, nobody calls me Sharon. 4.5 years alcohol free. And I've said it time and time again, never meant to be here. Didn't want a life of sobriety, boring as hell. Who the heck would choose to remove booze? I mean, why? Why would you? Gave myself a break, and then like this crazy stuff started to happen. Absolute game changer. Fell in love with sobriety, and here we are, wagging about it week in, week out, and over the influence. Now, I'm really excited to introduce today's guest because I follow her socials, have for many, many years. And when I was scrolling through, I was like, oh my God, the Your Mumsy Mum. She listens to the podcast. Ben, it's Your Mumsy Mum. She listens to our podcast. Do you know who she is? So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Sarah Turner, a.k.a. the Un-Mumsy Mum, to Over the Influence. Sarah, I can't believe our paths have crossed. It's wonderful to have you here.
Hello, Shaz and actual Ben. I can't believe this. You're saying, you're excited to have me on. Yeah, I cannot even begin to tell you how I inhaled your podcast episodes in the first weeks of deciding not to drink alcohol anymore. So yeah, it's unreal actually to be chatting to you both, because you've had a really positive impact on my power walks into work. I've had you in my ears. And it's been great. So I'm chuffed a bits to be here.
Can I ask you what brought you to Over the Influence? You know, of all the podcasts you could have been listening to, there must have been something in your mind and you're thinking, right, I'm going to take a break from booze. What led you to inhaling our episodes?
I had started slowly following alcohol-free accounts on Instagram. That was the start when I was sober curious, and I realized, rather than thinking, God, that sounds depressing when people told me that they'd given up booze, I realized that I started to think, wow, I wish I could do that. Like, I'll never be able to, but I wish I could, because it started to sound really attractive. So I think, and Instagram's clever, isn't it? The old algorithm. So the further down the rabbit hole I fell, the more I was targeted with alcohol-free content on Explore. So I think one alcohol-free page led to another, and I found your page, and then I was like, right, I'm going to listen to the podcast. So yeah, and I just did. Every time I drove anywhere in the car, I'd put it on my CarPlay, walking to work, doing the dishes, cooking tea. It was just on, and that was, you know, from the moment that I said I'm doing this, I tried to listen to something every day because I thought it would just keep me going. And it did.
And it did. And here you are now, chatting to us 6 months down the line, alcohol free. 6 months is huge. So if you don't mind us asking, what were you like as a drinker then? Let's rewind 6 and a bit months.
6 and a bit months ago, interestingly, I was probably, well, I know I would have been considered a normal drinker. I wasn't a daily drinker. I would regularly go for a couple of weeks at a time without booze because it was a game that I would play with myself to prove that I could. So I would think, well, you know, I haven't got a problem because I don't drink. I actually probably could have sat in the doctor's, you know, GP's room, and hand on heart, most weeks would have fallen within the, you know, recommended maximum guidelines. So 6.5 months ago, me was not on paper a problem drinker, but alcohol was starting to cause me problems, which was what I heard Ben say in one of the earliest episodes that I had listened to. So going back, so I'm 36, I started drinking at about 15, classic binge drinking teenage, you know, upbringing. I worked really hard at school and then got smashed every weekend from about the age of 15. And throughout the years, my relationship with alcohol has been all right until the nights out when it wasn't all right. So huge binge drinker on a night out. Everybody that's known me for any length of time has a drunken Sarah story. And they are, you know, when you're 18, 19, 25, they're funny. And when you're 35, they're not so funny. So my kind of journey, if we're going to go there.
We can go there with the J word, it's fine.
My journey to being alcohol free, the motivation, it was almost like a two-pronged motivation attack, which was one, wasn't having many big nights out, but if I was having a big night out, there was always a chance that it would be a blackout drunk, taking it too far, embarrassing myself and existing in a cloud of shame for about a month afterwards. You know, those nights were few and far between, but there was always one on the horizon. So even if that was in 18 months' time, there would have been another one. And it would be one where I put myself in danger because I don't have an off switch for drinking. I embarrass myself. I'm sick. I don't know how I've got home. And I kind of felt like I would have some nights out when that wouldn't happen. So then it would be like a little reset, and I'd be like, oh, I think I've grown up actually. And just went out for a few drinks with the girls, and check me out being all mature and sophisticated. And then about this time last year, well, actually a bit over a year ago, I went to my eldest place for a football team, really nice group of football mums. And I went over to one of their houses for a 50th birthday party, right? It was a surprise 50th party. We all wore our pajamas. It was like, she didn't know that it was a party. So she thought she was just coming round to watch some films and a bit, you know, kind of Pink Ladies in Greece type evening setup. I got massively carried away really, really early into the evening. And by, I think, 9:30, I was being sick. completely incoherent. I had to be driven home by another one of the mums who had to borrow a washing up bowl and have it on my lap. And then she was kind of having to hold my hair back while driving me home to deliver me to my husband, who I've been with for forever, since I was a teenager. And I think he hit the nail on the head where he said, we've all been there, like really sympathetically, we've all been there, but perhaps you've been there a bit more often than others. So yeah, it was, that was the always a fear for nights out for me. And then to add to that, the kind of real catalyst, I think, in the end, was that I'd started to drink a little bit more wine at home, red wine, because I was dead classy like that, you know, glass of red while I was cooking tea. Again, not always drinking every day, generally averaging maybe a couple of bottles a week. So not huge amounts, you know, compared to some, which is, I think, what we do to reassure ourselves. There's always somebody else that drinks more, right? But I had started to notice that having two glasses of wine on a midweek evening was having a massive impact on my mental health for the following days. So I was feeling a little bit anxious, kind of on edge, that base level of anxiety at all times where I felt like something bad was going to happen. That I always describe it as the doom cloud, like the doom cloud descends and you think something bad is going to happen. And I'd been exercising more, so I've been going to the gym. I was in quite good like shape physically. My youngest son, I've got three boys, my youngest is now five, and I felt like I got out of that real like newborn and toddler fog. Work's going really well, like career-wise, and I was thinking, why am I feeling like this? And there came a point when I thought, the only thing really to experiment with is to remove alcohol and see if it makes a difference. And surprise, surprise,
it did.
And that doom cloud, I mean, as you guys know, and you've talked about a lot on here, it's not a magic fix. It doesn't make all of your problems, you know, removing alcohol doesn't remove all of the problems from your life. And I still have days when I feel a bit off and a bit on edge, but I can kind of, I'm more in touch with those feelings rather than thinking, well, I'm just foggy because I had three glasses of Shiraz last night or whatever it was. So it was the force of the two things. It was that back of my mind, it's not going to be long before I'm embarrass myself and actually put myself in danger on a night out again, because there's always one round the corner. And also, even just drinking, you know, within what is seen to be a moderate amount was affecting my well-being. Like I realized that this thing that I loved doing and I looked forward to doing three or four times a week was actually putting a bit of a dampener on my life. So that's why I came to the, after a couple of years, I'd say, of being sober curious, a couple of friends who've done it, and no one ever regrets it, do they? No one goes, oh, do you know what? I wouldn't recommend it, love. So yeah, I was like, it was the final hangover, not a big one, not a massive one. And it had been a night out that hadn't ended in real drama, although I had been sick, but that used to be commonplace. I used to just come home and be sick. Like, how mad is that? And I sat down in the park with the boys the next day, always would force myself out with a hangover to prove that I was still functioning because I didn't have a problem. And I just went, I'm done. I'm so bored. I'm bored of the headspace it takes up. I'm bored of thinking, am I going to have a glass of wine tonight? I'm bored of thinking, well, I didn't have one on Saturday or Sunday, so I can have one on Monday and Tuesday. I'm just bored. I'm over it. I've had enough. Now is the time. And that was October. And yeah.
Sarah, can I ask you an unlikely question for an alcohol-free podcast? Are there things about drinking that you really liked?
Oh, God, yeah. And actually, even 6 months in, I'm quite aware that it's 6 months, which is great, but it's also still quite early, you know. And there were reasons why I drank, I think. And I haven't quite come to terms with that, maybe that part of my life, that era of my life being over. So yeah, the social side of drinking for me, you know, the social lubricant of having a glass of wine and it taking the edge off that awkward situation, relied on that heavily, especially for work. I mean, as an author, I went to do book events and stuff, and you know, it was terrifying. People would turn up, they'd buy a ticket to come and hear me talk about my book, and just a little something to take the edge off. I felt like I needed it. And then, of course, because you have something to take the edge off and then the event goes well, your brain then tells you that that's an ingredient of why it went well. So you learn, don't you, that that's what you need. And despite the being sick and having to be driven home by friends, two glasses of wine in Sarah was great fun. It was like myself, but a tiny bit dialed up on the fun side, or so it felt. I don't necessarily feel like that now that I've had time to kind of process it, but that bonding that you have with groups of friends who you've historically gone out for drinks with is hard to unlearn that, I think. And I was thinking about this the other day. Someone said, do you miss it? And I said, I think I miss the excitement of having a drink more than I miss having a drink itself. That girls' WhatsApp group, you know, can't wait to get on it later.
It's that build-up, isn't it? It's that anticipation. It's that getting ready. And like you say, it's the whole event. And actually, the first drink too, like you say, fine. And if it could stop there, great. But listening to what you're saying, God, I relate to so much of it.
I think what really did me a favour in the end was that anybody that I've spoken to that I know that I've said I've stopped drinking, and I mean we could do a whole podcast on people's reactions to you stopping drinking.
That's great.
But I get there's a lot of but you didn't have a problem with drink, because I was drinking less than they were, or you know, in a standard week. And I think because I loved that feeling of being one or two glasses of red wine in, it used to be my treat midweek. I'd do this game where I would, if we had plans at the weekend, I would actually quite often be able to not have a drink at the weekend. But then on a Monday night, my husband would go to play five-a-side football and I would open a bottle of red and watch University Challenge, because that's how cool I am. And I loved it. That feeling of the edges of your world blurring and that what you perceive to be relaxation, because I've been trying to learn all of the, well, this is what it feels like, but this is what's actually happening in your body stuff. But I really enjoyed that feeling. And I think a middle ground for me would have been to say, well, I'll just drink at home and I won't allow myself to drink on a night out. I'll be designated driver. Because you wouldn't have found me throwing up at home or polishing off even a whole bottle of wine was rare for me at home. But because I'd started to feel a bit anxious as well, it was enough to be like, you know, do you know, like the brain space to start putting these arbitrary rules in. Well, I could drink two glasses at home, but I could do this and I'll stick to this drink and I won't, you know, I won't drink if it's, I don't know, the full moon in whatever. The removing it, as scary as it was, and as much as I thought, I'm not sure if this is the right thing, on day one, that feeling of relief of being like, I'm not going to have this week where I'm thinking, is tonight a night I'm going to drink? Am I not? What event's coming up? What am I going to go to? What am I going to have to put in place to make sure that I'm not the one that takes it too far again? Classic Sarah. Where is she? Oh, she's just being sick. That removing that noise of, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not been, that's not to say that there hasn't since been other noise of me thinking, is this the right thing? Am I now really just boring? But, you know, you have that gut feeling and that kind of, I don't know, that like compass for yourself of what is right. And I can't think of anything I've ever done in my life for myself that has felt more positive than going, do you know what? I'm done. I've completed alcohol. It was good while it lasted for 20 years, but I'm out.
And that is exactly why I asked you that unlikely question, because the idea that, you know, You said earlier, now's the time. I think it's all right. That's a good enough reason to remove alcohol, is that it had its time and its place in your life. I, you know, 24-year-old Ben, so 10 years ago, 24-year-old me versus 34-year-old me. Our drinking sounds very similar. Like I exactly that kind of, some nights I'd go out and there'd be no consequences. Other nights I'd wake up in the morning and go, why the fuck did you do that last night, you absolute idiot? But then when I was 24, I didn't have anyone to embarrass. I didn't have a partner. I didn't have kids. The environment was different as well. You know, now we go to nice restaurants and round to people's houses for dinner because I'm a 34-year-old man with a wife and a soon-to-be wife and a child and stepkids. Back then when I was 24, I was in clubs and pubs, and it's a chaotic environment where these kind of stupid things that I'd do would kind of go unnoticed. People are afraid to give up alcohol because they think that life's going to change. Well, actually, I look at my life. My life's changing. You know, I'm 34. I've got a son. You know, life is changing around me. It's fine that I enjoyed drinking in my 20s, and it's fine that actually drinking in my 30s doesn't fit my lifestyle anymore. That's a good enough reason to remove alcohol, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, definitely for me, as life has shifted and your priorities change, alcohol for me was a way for me to cling on to an identity of who I was 10, 15, 20 years before. So I would almost regress back to fun, party Sarah, always the person on a night out. And again, I wasn't having many nights out, but if I was on a night out as a mum of three, there was like, it was like muscle memory that went, we don't stop when the pubs close, like we're going clubbing, because I wanted to reassure myself that I was still young and fun and, you know, still got it. And I think our sense of self and identity plays massively into why we drink, or it did for me anyway. As a mum, I felt like, interestingly, when I had very young kids, I didn't drink a lot of wine at home because I just couldn't do it. I'm so bad on no sleep and hangovers that I was able to not drink to excess kind of ever when the kids were very small, because I just couldn't function. But as they've started to get a bit older, I felt like my wine drinking was creeping up a bit, because it was like, well, it's my time now to enjoy the evening. So they're all, you know, playing Fortnite or watching YouTube, and I can now have a glass of wine and this is my time. And I would get that feeling of, it's like Sarah coming back, that old sense of I'm fun. And I don't know about you guys, but if I was two or three drinks in, that was always the time when I would text people. I would message people and be like, we really need to arrange a night out. I miss you so much. And that was only because I was two glasses of wine in as I was getting chicken dippers and chips out of the oven. Like, I have got friends that have been like, are you all right? I haven't heard from you for ages. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I feel like I probably only used to message you when I was like a glass of wine in, because it ignites that, oh, I'm really fun and let's go out and let's remember who we were. And I've kind of realized this year that it's okay if you're not the same person that you were 20 years ago. Look, I love who I was 20 years ago.
You're not.
No.
You're never going to be.
No, you're
like,
not.
You're 20 years on.
But
like,
I am...
You're never going to be the same person that you were 20 years ago.
You're so right. And I understand it. I know I have lots of thoughts, and I'm sure Shaz does as well, about wine o'clock and mummy wine time. And, you know, thank God there's a vodka and tonic at the end of the day. And I think it's everywhere online. It's everywhere on social media. There is a shift, I think, now, hopefully, starting. But when I started my parenting blog, which is a decade ago, that was how we bonded with other parents online, is, you know, I'd have had a really tough day and I'd have been like, oh my God, I've just been to Soft Play and I walked in and, you know, it was like the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, and I'm, you know, I'm traumatized by a day with a toddler and a newborn. And the comments were almost always, pour yourself a drink, You know, cheers to the weekend. And I think that helped me to feel like I was part of something. I was part of this really fun club of mums who were still themselves because they were having a drink. I mean, I had a sign in my kitchen. I've only just taken it down. I had a sign in my kitchen that said, I'm on the gin and tonic diet. I've already lost 4 days. I mean,
Sharon, shit things on walls.
Shit,
that's got to be in the next
walls.
Premium. We've got a feat. I'm not sure if you've heard our premium podcast before, Sarah, but we have got a feature. It started off as shit social media. And then I sing it 3 times and layer it over. So it's got like full on harmonies.
Nice.
It's ridiculous. But shit things you see about alcohol on social media. And then someone sent us a shit sign from their kitchen and then shit things on walls became a feature. So if you ever see any of these things, especially when you're out and about in a wine bar where they've kind of painted something on the walls that she's going,
I know. 5 o'clock somewhere.
5 o'clock somewhere. Shit things on walls.
But also if you drill down and I know it's one of those things where you go, it's only a sign, right? It's been in my kitchen for 10 years. And when you think about it, I'm on the gin and tonic diet. I've already lost 4 days. I used to think that was the funniest thing ever.
And
I thought it was brilliant. And I would have wanted to draw people's attention to it, to be like, look how funny I am. I think it's hilarious when you get blackout drunk and lose big chunks of time because you've been drinking alcohol. And it's only now. It's like, you know when the penny starts to drop and you can't... So now I'm like, I mean, it did make me laugh, but I was like, what the fuck? Why have I got that up?
I've got something similar. I think mine says, this house runs on laughter, smiles and Prosecco. Ho, ho, ho. But anyway, I've taken it down. We're just going to take a really quick break from this episode with Sarah Turner, the fabulous Unmumsy Woman. Please, can we keep this brief? Because I want to get back to the episode because it's an absolute belter with my new BFF, best friend forever.
It's bank holiday weekend this weekend. Don't go boozing. Join our community instead and hang out with us. Okay, back to Sarah.
overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Yes.
Over the Influence.
Yeah, join our community. It's either £20 a month or £200 a year. If you do the annual option, £200, because then you get 2 months for free. You get alcohol-free discussion forums. You get unlimited access to our member-to-member Zoom calls. You get OTI chat, which is basically our member-to-member messenger, which is really good and helps you stay accountable. What else do you get for your membership? You get discounts on all the events that we do.
You get
first dibs.
We're
doing yoga now, OTI yoga. That's great on a Sunday.
Well, I can't wait to see you in Lycra.
Going on.
That's worth 20 quid alone.
Not allowed to do too much today because Shaz says we've got to keep it quick.
Wish I'd never said it. You're doing my head in.
Join our community. It's bank holiday.
There's too much to squeeze in. There's loads. And work it out. It's pence. It's pence per day. Balance that against what you might be spending at the moment on alcohol. If you want any change, get involved. For so many people, in fact, everybody in our community tells us this, the missing piece of the AF jigsaw is connection. So connect with Over the Influence this bank holiday weekend. We would love to see you. Overtheinfluence.co.uk. Back to the episode with Sarah.
Well, just quickly, you're Zooming on Friday night and Saturday morning, aren't you?
Yep.
I'm Zooming on Monday morning because it's bank holiday, May Day, Monday. So that's my Zoom day, 9 o'clock. Yeah.
Actually, I need to pass out. So I am Zooming from a hotel room on the Friday at 7 o'clock UK time.
Oh, of course,
time.
But you're climbing Scarfell Pike.
I'll be up Scarfell with 45 community members.
What, another great benefit of the Over the Influence community. It's not just about online connection. It's IRL stuff too. If you've never checked us out, I said £20, it's not. I made it 1p more expensive. It's $19.99 a month.
Bargain.
If you are, because it makes all the difference.
Five a week. I'd spend that minimum a day on alcohol.
Well, yeah.
In the drinking days.
Right. The Unmumsy Mum. She's here. Let's get back to her, shall we?
Yes, please. Oh, I've got so many observations. So much of what you say resonates with me and my drinking journey. And it's really interesting because where you stopped at the age of 35, 36, I could probably say that's where I should have stopped, and it didn't. I went on until the age of 44, so gained another 9 years of drinking time. And guess what happened? Kel Surprise never brought it back, never dialed it down. It only ever got more and more and more because of the nature of alcohol. It's addictive, and drinking it's progressive. And in order to get that two-glass buzz that we've talked about, it would need to be a bottle. And then when I hit the age of 44, drinking a bottle of wine a night at home and then some, and more at weekends like you, spewing up, tactical chunders. Oh, I don't want the nights. The shame, the absolute shame. But it happened and here we are. And so every credit for doing what you're doing now, because you've saved yourself, I truly think, that potential to become a daily drinker where the wine is your friend at night and it ramps up and up and up. Coming back to what you said about identity and am I still young, fun and all the rest of it. Yes, with knobs on, but it takes guts and it takes balls and it just takes real sort of determination to do it all sober. And I'm realising now, I'm 50 this year, 50. It's so old. However, I'm having more fun now doing stuff with friends and family. Oh, and other sober weirdos that are dull and boring. Having an absolute ball. Making new connections. Getting involved in new hobbies. Doing things that, Sarah, I would relentlessly take the piss out of as a drinker. Well, that's boring. Why would you do that? Who does that? Who does afternoon tea if there's now Prosecco involved? All that, it's taken me, and it still continues. You know, I'm 4.5 years into this now. I've realised I never needed the booze. I never needed that extra, I don't know how you describe it. I just didn't need it to be who I am and who I thought I was. I've stripped it all back, and this is it. This is as good as it gets, I'm afraid. But actually, I'm really, really enjoying it. And that's a really bloody long-winded way of saying, big up your bad self. Because, you know, you and Ben, you're both dead young. I'm 50 this year. You're both still mid-30s. You know, it pains me to say it. I wish I'd done what you did. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, Sarah. But looking back, as a parent of 3 children, but I didn't. I kept messing about for another 9 long years. I mean, it's never too late, but every credit for doing it. I think it's amazing. And you are still young and fun. Yes.
Can I ask, Sarah? What identity, because you're 6 months into this now, from the way you're talking, it feels like this is a longer term thing for you.
Yeah.
You're kind of hoping that you are now alcohol free.
I think I am.
Definitely.
When it was day one and forever felt like a really long time, I've got a friend actually, Tom, who's 2 years alcohol free. And he said to me something along the lines of, there's no such thing as forever, really, because you wake up tomorrow and that's tomorrow. And then the day after that is just that day. And like you're making it something it's not by thinking forever. But in my head.
You need to get him on the podcast. Yeah. He sounds amazing.
He's great, like Tom. You should. Tom's great. And also he was really, really supportive and kind of did all the right things by not going, yeah, you should definitely do it. Because, you know, I'm not somebody that likes to be told what to do. So it has to be my idea.
Yeah.
But I did see how positively it had changed his life. So, it definitely helped having those chats. But that thing about forever is I know I'm not going to want a drink tomorrow. And in the last 6 months, there have been 2 occasions where I've thought I really fancy a drink today. Neither of them were occasions when I had any doubt that I would have a drink. I never thought this will make me go and buy a drink. One was a really, really stressful work day. And as I trudged home in the rain, I went past the little Tesco that used to be my little beacon of going in under the pretense of doing something for me that was buying a bottle of wine that was something to look forward to. And look forward to it, I did. I was always looking forward to a little drinking session. But I didn't stop. And the next day, as I knew I would be, I was over the moon that I hadn't had a drink. And I think that's just how it's going to, in all honesty, I think that's just how it's going to continue for forevermore. I can't imagine. I've done Christmas, I've done my birthday, I've done a girls' night out, which was fine. Not it wasn't the same as a girls' night out of yesteryear, but I think you accept, don't you, that, you know, your social situation shape shift. And I've done other things that have been great fun. Went out with a group of friends bowling. I've got more into going to the, I've become that person that goes to like circuits on a Tuesday night.
Oh God. And, can I just pull you up on this? I saw you at the gym on Easter Sunday and I thought I liked
not physically, should point out. We didn't bump into each other at the gym, that would have been lovely.
I was sat on my fat ass eating chocolate looking at you on your Insta story at the gym, and I thought, I don't think I like her.
Like her anymore. No, I don't like me either.
Good on you, Sarah, though.
But you know, interestingly, the gym used to be something that I would keep up. That was part of the... Because I was only having a couple of glasses every few days, going to the gym was something that I would do. Even if I felt a little bit hungover, I would go because it would be another way to prove to myself that it was all fine and everything was in check. And now when I think about it, I was permanently doing things to counterbalance the negative impact of alcohol. So I'd have to go out and get more fresh air because I had a headache, or I would just permanently be thinking, what can I do to rectify this? Whether that was a hangover or what have you. And like you say about like being sick and stuff, even on the nights out when I wasn't massively wasted, I would come home and I'd neck, you know, two or three painkillers and wash them down as a little, oh, I'll give me a boost for the, you know, I'll get some pain relief in my system for the
I used to do exactly the same thing.
Do you know what? If I hadn't had six cocktails, I wouldn't have had a headache, would I? But in my head, it was better to suffer all the ills and all the pains that came with alcohol, to hold on to that beacon of those first couple of glasses that made me fun and allowed me to fit in social situations that actually are becoming less important
fun
in my life anyway.
I totally get that whole drinking because it's a doorway back to that kind of young, fun, sociable person that used to go out drinking every weekend. Like, I totally get that. But what's the identity that you want to build now?
I think now, like, my free time, I mean, life is busy and life is great. Like, I've got three boys. They're great fun. All of them are mad as a box of frogs. It's wall-to-wall wrestling and farting and football. And I'm needed. They need me. They need me to, you know, physically to drive them to football matches and pull them out of, you know, Royal Rumbles on the trampoline in our garden every day. And just, you know, there's the mum me is busy and work's going really well. You know, I write books for a living now, and never in a million years did I think that would be my primary source of income. A publisher would go, yeah, do you know what, we'll give you put a couple of books on a book deal and see how we go. So I think I feel like the time has come to be a bit more selective about what I do and what I choose to do with my time. And I have loads of lovely friends, really lovely friends, and actually the group of football mums from that fateful Chunder gate at poor Ali's 50th. Ali doesn't drink, actually. So happy birthday, Ali. Sarah's been sick and we've got to take her home. That group, who I recently went out for drinks with, were top notch in terms of their response. It was like, you know, do you mind us asking why you've decided? Because, you know, that's a fair question when usually I was the one that was like, where are we going? Let's get on it. And I said, I've stopped over justifying. I've stopped giving everybody war and peace on alcohol. Sarah Turner, alcohol, my alcohol journey, 2000 and, you know, whatever.
I'd buy the book though, Sarah, seriously. Yeah. It's got legs.
I mean, there's some, There's some cracking nights out in there. Honestly, that is not the worst one.
We don't need to talk about it here. It's
no,
fine.
We don't. We really don't. We really don't. And I think I just said to them, my like textbook answer now has just become, I'm just happy. I'm so much happier without it. And
simple.
And they effective. And they all of them, even the ones that love a drink, were like, oh, cool, like, fair play, well done, that's brilliant. Like, what day are you up to? Oh, great. Oh, well, we've researched the place we're going to next, and they do some great mocktails. And
that's amazing.
Great group of friends. And as you will know, that is not, unfortunately, the standard response. So it tends to be people that I know slightly less well, or people that had known me from way back when I was always a big drinker on a night out, who just cannot get their heads around it. And I think if me not drinking means I can't participate in some of those group activities anymore, then I'm okay with that. You know, I'll tap out and say it was great fun and we used to have a really good time, but this isn't for me anymore. And yeah, I'll do something else instead. So I think genuine friends, some of whom I've bonded with massively drinking, I will still be friends with, because our friendship kind of transcends that. It's more than that now. It might have had its roots in us getting bladdered, but actually there's a deeper connection. Any friendships that are based solely on us getting rat-arsed probably won't stand the test of time, to be honest. And it is sad. You are closing that chapter in your life, aren't you? And you know, it's not an easy thing always. But I think there will be some social situations that just are not. It's just naturally are not going to be for me anymore. And that's not because I'm not drinking and therefore they're not fun. I think it's because they were only fun because I was drinking. And therefore, I haven't got time for it. I'm like, I've got a lot on, and I've got a lot of time for the people that I think I can have a better, more meaningful chat and relationship with, and sit down and remember what we've talked about, and not start. Oh, I used to cry as well. I used to it would start off, I'd be dancing on a bar, and then half an hour later, I'd be telling somebody that it was really sad that my granddad Colin died.
Crying and chundering. I mean, I'm glad we didn't go out together, me and you.
Is that the title of it? Crying and chundering.
Crying and chundering and losing a shoe, like a trolley Cinderella.
Oh, it's horrendous.
Yeah.
Sarah, I knew we'd enjoy this chat with you with absolute knobs on. So thank you for listening. First of all, thank you for listening to Over the Influence. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. We are chuffed to bits. We really are. And I think your story is a really important one to share, because we've not discussed, you know, life-threatening rock bottoms or anything like that. We've talked about the fact that drinking just simply didn't serve you anymore. And here you are, 6 months down the line, loving alcohol-free life. So thank you for sharing that with us and our listeners. Before you go, give your books a good old plug, and where can people find more about you?
Thank you. Can I just say it's been an absolute pleasure. I've been so excited about coming on this podcast. I think I squealed when you said, would you consider coming on? And I was like, yes, but I can't commit to it until I want a decent chunk of days under my belt. But I was super excited. So you can find me on social media at The Unmumsy Mum. And my latest book, my first novel, is called Stepping Up. And it's a Richard and Judy book club pick. And it's out now. You can get it wherever you get your books from. So yeah, that's me.
That was just so enjoyable. I absolutely loved that chat with the actual author Sarah, the unmumsy mum, Sarah Turner. What a lovely, lovely woman. Friend for life, I think, whether she likes it or not. And you know what, Ben? I think we'll get her back on the pod in 6 months' time. She's just got so much to share. And you know what I love about it? No rock bottom. And that comes back to what you say so many times. You don't need a rock bottom. It doesn't have to all go to shit, you know, in order for you to sort of reassess and maybe think, actually, I'm just going to take a look at my relationship with alcohol. And I love what Sarah's had to share because it's just so, so flipping relatable. In fact, I wanted to join our community and get on some of these walks. Should be great company.
We could have spoken to her all night,
I
reckon.
We could have gone on for hours and hours.
Was I making sense on that kind of identity thing? The bit about kind of drinking is tied in with this kind of younger identity, this kind of carefree existence that we used to have before responsibility came along. But actually, it's all right for it just to, that's not me anymore.
It changes. You know,
and that's fine. Time and place.
Yeah, but then, you know, a part of that, listening to that, you and Sarah talking, because you are 10 years younger than me, more. Sarah's, you're both more than 10 years younger than me. It makes me wince a little bit when I think, you know, with hindsight, I wish I'd done what Sarah did, which was take that break, late 30s, 36, 37. I clung on till I was 44, you know, with that whole identity thing. And I need alcohol because this is who I am. And it's all so fun, fun, fun. And it's all part of the extrovert character. What a crock of. No, it's just not.
Are you doing it now?
I'm doing it now. And
it's now.
Yeah, it's never too late. And I'll never go back. Nobody, 49 years old. You know, there comes a point where you're like, I am sick of this. It's quite boring. Don't let people tell you for 1 minute that sobriety is boring, that a life without alcohol is boring. The same old shit, day in, day out, week in, week out. I can speak from bitter experience. That gets boring. And we're not here to be on a rant, actually.
Although, if you ever fancy a little rant about alcohol-free life, then you can do
come, come to us.
Because we've got loads of people in our community who talk about this kind of stuff a lot. You know, there might not be many people in your life that are doing this. You might be a kind of sober lone ranger. If you are, join us over theinfluence.co.uk. We've got loads of sober lone rangers there from all over the world, but obviously they're not lonely anymore because they've got each other.
One of the recurring themes on my Zoom calls, which are just ace, by the way. Sometimes I just look around at the screen, everybody's on there. And Ben, it's so international. We are so worldwide. It's just brilliant. I think, how have we reached this corner of the world? But one of the things that I love is that people come on and they go, okay, so I'm 10 days without alcohol. I'm 6 months without alcohol. I just want to share it with somebody because nobody else gets it. And we're like, come into the bosom of OTI and we shall celebrate.
Oh,
no, that's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, we're trying to encourage people to join. Trying to make it sound good.
I was trying to make it sound like cozy
There's
and welcoming.
Out there. Oh, yeah, go on then.
Oh, no, it's not that sort of
community. Your community. It's not that kind of place.
No, stop growling down the microphone. That's awful.
Oh, what did you say? Community or?
No. Scrap that. No bosoms. No, we'll move on.
No.
No. We'll just
I don't want to join anymore.
Simply welcome you into the friendliest place in this alcohol-free corner of the internet, that is Over the Influence. And if people don't get it in your life, trust us, we absolutely do. And we will celebrate the tiniest wins right up to the biggest wins. It's a cracking place. If you want a little bit of connection, if you maybe want to feel less sort of socially awkward, socially isolated on your own, with Over the Influence, you are absolutely not. Have a look at the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Brill, see you next week. You and your bosom.